5. On Monday, the day I'm supposed to talk to the detectives, I'm crying out of nowhere, hunched over my bed as the iron in my hand spits out steam. Mama takes it before I burn the Williamson crest on my polo. She rubs my shoulder. Let it out, Munch. We have a quiet breakfast at the kitchen table without Seven. He spent the night at his mama's house. I pick at my waffles. Just thinking about going into that station with all those cops makes me want to puke. Food would make it worse. After breakfast, we join hands in the living room like we always do, under the framed poster of the 10-point program, and Daddy leads us in prayer.
Black Jesus, watch over my babies today, he says. Keep them safe, steer them from wrong, and help them recognize snakes from friends. Give them the wisdom they need to be their own people. Help Seven with this situation at his mama's house, and let him know he can always come home. Thank you for Sikani's miraculous sudden healing that just so happened to come after he found out they're having pizza at school today.
I peek out at Sikani, whose eyes and mouth are open wide. I smirk and close my eyes.
Be with Lisa at the clinic as she helps your people. Help my baby girl get through her situation, Lord. Give her peace of mind, and help her speak her truth this afternoon. And lastly, strengthen Ms. Rosalie, Cameron, Tammy, and Brenda as they go through this difficult time. In your precious name I pray. Amen.
Amen, the rest of us say. Daddy, why you put me on the spot like that with Black Jesus? Sikani complains.
He knows the truth,
Daddy says. He wipes crust from the corners of Sikani's eyes and straightens the collar of his polo.
I'm trying to help you out, get you some mercy or something, man.
Daddy pulls me into a hug.
You gonna be all right?
I nod into his chest. Yeah. I could stay like this all day. It's one of the few places where 115 doesn't exist, and where I can forget about talking to detectives. But Mama says we need to leave before rush hour. Now, don't get it wrong. I can drive. I got my license a week after my 16th birthday. But I can't get a car unless I pay for it myself. I told my parents I don't have time for a job with school and basketball. They said I don't have time for a car then either. Messed up. It takes 45 minutes to get to school on a good day, and an hour on a slow one. Sikani doesn't have to wear his headphones because Mama doesn't cuss anybody out on the freeway. She hums with gospel songs on the radio and says, "Give me strength, Lord, give me strength." We get off the freeway into Riverton Hills and pass all these gated neighborhoods. Uncle Carlos lives in one of them. To me, it's so weird to have a gate around a neighborhood. Seriously, are they trying to keep people out or keep people in? If somebody puts a gate around Garden Heights, it'll be a little bit of both. Our school is gated, too, and the campus has new modern buildings with lots of windows and marigolds blooming along the walkways. Mama gets in the carpool lane for the lower school. Sikani, you remembered your iPad? Yes, ma'am. Lunch card? Yes, ma'am. Gym shorts, and you better have gotten the clean ones, too. Yes, Mama, I'm almost 9. Can't you give me a little credit? She smiles. All right, big man. Think you can give me some sugar? Sikani leans over the front seat and kisses her cheek. Love you. Love you too. And don't forget Seven's bringing you home today. He runs over to some of his friends and blends in with all the other kids in khakis and polos. We get in the carpool lane from my school. All right, Munch, Mama says. Seven's gonna bring you to the clinic after school. Then you and I will go to the station. Are you absolutely sure you're up for it? No, but Uncle Carlos promised it'll be okay. I'll do it. Okay, call me if you don't think you can make it the whole day at school. Hold up, I could have stayed home? Why are you making me come in the first place? 'Cause you need to get out the house, out that neighborhood. I want you to at least try, Star. This will sound mean, but just because Khalil's not living doesn't mean you stop living. You understand, baby? Yeah, I know she's right, but it feels wrong. We get to the front of the carpool line. Now, I don't have to ask if you brought some funky-ass gym shorts, do I? She says. I laugh. No. Bye, Mama. Bye, baby. I get out the car. For at least 7 hours, I don't have to talk about 115. I don't have to think about Khalil. I just have to be normal Star at normal Williamson and have a normal day. That means flipping the switch in my brain, so I'm Williamson Star. Williamson Star doesn't use slang. If a rapper would say it, she doesn't say it, even if her white friends do. Slang makes them cool. Slang makes her hood. Williamson Star holds her tongue when people piss her off, so nobody will think she's the angry black girl. Williamson Star is approachable. No stank eyes, side eyes, none of that. Williamson Star is non-confrontational. Basically, Williamson Star doesn't give anyone a reason to call her ghetto. I can't stand myself for doing it, but I do it anyway. I sling my backpack over my shoulder. As usual, it matches my J's, the blue and black 11s like Jordan wore in Space Jam. I worked at the store a month to buy them. I hate dressing like everybody else, but the Fresh Prince taught me something. See, Will always wore his school uniform jacket inside out so he could be different. I can't wear my uniform inside out, but I can make sure my sneakers are always dope and my backpack always matches them. I go inside and scan the atrium for Maya, Haley, or Chris. I don't see them, but I see that half the kids have tans from spring break. Luckily, I was born with one. Someone covers my eyes. Maya, I know that's you. She snickers and moves her hands. I'm not tall at all, but Maya has to stand on her tiptoes to cover my eyes. And the chick actually wants to play center on the varsity basketball team. She wears her hair in a high bun because she probably thinks it makes her look taller, but nope. What's up, Ms. I can't text anyone back, she says, and we do our little handshake. It's not complicated like Daddy and King's, but it works for us. I was starting to wonder if you were abducted by aliens. Huh? She holds up her phone. The screen has a brand new crack stretching from corner to corner. Maya's always dropping it. You haven't texted me in 2 days, Star, she says. Not cool. Oh, I've barely looked at my phone since Khalil got... since the incident. Sorry, I was working at the store. You know how crazy that can get. How was your spring break? Okay, I guess. She munches on some Sour Patch Kids. We visited my great-grandparents in Taipei. I ended up taking a bunch of snapbacks and basketball shorts, so all week long I heard, why do you dress like a boy? Why do you play a boy sport? Blah, blah, blah. And it was awful when they saw a picture of Ryan. They asked if he was a rapper. I laugh and steal some of her candy. Maya's boyfriend, Ryan, happens to be the only other black kid in 11th grade, and everybody expects us to be together. Because apparently when it's two of us, we have to be on some Noah's Ark type shit and pair up to preserve the blackness of our grade. Lately, I'm super aware of BS like that. We head for the cafeteria. Our table near the vending machines is almost full. There's Haley sitting on top of it, having a heated discussion with curly-haired, dimpled Luke. I think that's foreplay for them. They've liked each other since sixth grade, and if your feelings can survive the awkwardness of middle school, you should stop playing around and go out. Some of the other girls from the team are there, too. Jess, the co-captain, and Britt, the center, who makes Maya look like an aunt. It's kind of stereotypical that we all sit together, but it worked out that way. I mean, who else will listen to us bitch about swollen knees and understand inside jokes born on the bus after a game? Chris's boys from the basketball team are at the table next to ours, egging Haley and Luke on. Chris isn't there yet, unfortunately, and fortunately. Luke sees me and Maya and reaches his arms toward us.
Thank you! Two sensible people who can end this discussion!
I slide onto the bench beside Jess. She rests her head on my shoulder.
They've been at it for 15 minutes.
Poor girl. I pat her hair. I have a secret crush on Jess's pixie cut. My neck's not long enough for one, but her hair is perfect. Every strand is where it should be. If I were into girls, I would totally date her for her hair, and she would date me for my shoulder.
What's it about this time? I ask.
Pop-Tarts, Britt says.
Haley turns to us and points at Luke. This jerk actually said they're better warmed up in the microwave.
Ew, I say, instead of my usual ill. And Maya goes, are you serious?
I know, right? Says Haley.
Jesus Christ, Luke says. I only asked for a dollar to buy one from the machine.
You're not wasting my money to destroy a perfectly good Pop-Tart in a microwave.
They're supposed to be heated up, he argues.
I actually agree with Luke, Jess says. Pop-Tarts are 10 times better heated up.
I move my shoulder so her head isn't resting on it. We can't be friends anymore. Her mouth drops open and she pouts. Fine. Fine, I say, and she rests her head on my shoulder with a wide grin. Total weirdo. I don't know how she'll survive without my shoulder when she graduates in a few months.
Anyone who heats up a Pop-Tart should be charged, Haley says.
And imprisoned, I say.
And forced to eat uncooked Pop-Tarts until they accept how good they are, Maya adds.
It is law, Haley finishes, smacking the table like that settles it.
You guys have issues,
Luke says, hopping off the table. He picks at Haley's hair.
I think all that dye seeped into your brain.
She swats at him as he leaves. She's added blue streaks to her honey blonde hair and cut it shoulder length. In fifth grade, she trimmed it with some scissors during a math test because she felt like it. That was the moment I knew she didn't give a shit.
I like the blue hills, I say, and the cut.
Yeah, Maya grins. It's very Joe Jonas of you. Haley whips her head around so fast, her eyes flashing. Maya and I snicker. So there's a video deep in the depths of YouTube of the three of us lip-syncing to the Jonas Brothers and pretending to play guitars and drums in Haley's bedroom. She decided she was Joe, I was Nick, and Maya was Kevin. I really wanted to be Joe. I secretly loved him the most. But Haley said she should have him. So I let her. I let her have her way a lot. Still do. That's part of being Williamson's star, I guess.
I so have to find that video, Jess says.
No! Haley goes, sliding off the tabletop. It must never be found.
She sits across from us. Never! Never! If I remembered that account's password, I'd delete it.
Oh, what was the account's name? Jess asks. Joe Bro Lover or something? Wait, no. Joe Bro Lova. Everybody liked to misspell shit in middle school.
I smirk and mumble. Close. Haley looks at me.
Star!
Maya and Britt crack up. It's moments like this that I feel normal at Williamson. Despite the guidelines I put on myself, I've still found my group,
my table.
Okay, then, Haley says. I see how it is, Maya Jonas and Nick's Starry Girl 2000. So, Hales, I say, before she can finish my old screen name. She grins. How was your spring break?
Haley loses her grin and rolls her eyes.
Oh, it was wonderful. Dad and stepmother Dearest dragged me and Remy to the house in the Bahamas for family bonding.
And bam, that normal feeling, gone. I suddenly remember how different I am from most of the kids here. Nobody would have to drag me or my brothers to the Bahamas. We'd swim there if we could. For us, a family vacation is staying at a local hotel with a swimming pool for a weekend.
Sounds like my parents, says Britt. Took us to fucking Harry Potter World for the third year in a row. I'm sick of butter beer and corny family photos with wands.
Holy shit. Who the fuck complains about going to Harry Potter World? Or butter beer? Or wands?
I hope none of them ask about my spring break. They went to Taipei, the Bahamas, Harry Potter World. I stayed in the hood and saw a cop kill my friend.
I guess the Bahamas wasn't so bad, Haley says. They wanted us to do family stuff, but we ended up doing our own thing the entire time.
You mean you texted me the entire time, Maya says.
It was still my own thing. All day, every day, Maya adds, ignoring the time difference.
Whatever, Shorty. You know you like talking to me.
Oh, I say.
That's cool. Really, though, it's not.
Haley never texted me during spring break. She barely texts me at all lately. Maybe once a week now, and it used to be every day.
Something's changed between us, and neither one of us acknowledges it. We're normal when we're at Williamson, like now. Beyond here, though, we're no longer best friends. Just, I don't know.
Plus, she unfollowed my Tumblr. She has no clue that I know. I once posted a picture of Emmett Till, a 14-year-old black boy who was murdered for whistling at a white woman in 1955. His mutilated body didn't look human. Haley texted me immediately after, freaking out. I thought it was because she couldn't believe someone would do that to a kid. No, she couldn't believe I would reblog such an awful picture. Not long after that, she stopped liking and reblogging my other posts. I looked through my followers list. Aw, Hales was no longer following me. With me living 45 minutes away, Tumblr is supposed to be sacred ground where our friendship is cemented. Unfollowing me is the same as saying, I don't like you anymore.
Maybe I'm being sensitive.
Or maybe things have changed.
Maybe I've changed.
For now, I guess we'll keep pretending everything is fine. The first bell rings. On Mondays, AP English is first for me, Haley, and Maya. On the way, they get into this big discussion-turned-argument about NCAA brackets and the Final Four. Haley was born a Notre Dame fan. Maya hates them almost unhealthily. I stay out that discussion. The NBA is more my thing anyway. We turn down the hall, and Chris is standing in the doorway of our class, his hands stuffed in pockets and a pair of headphones draped around his neck. He looks straight at me and stretches his arm across the doorway. Haley glances from him to me, back and forth, back and forth.
Did something happen with you guys?
My pursed lips probably give me away.
Yeah, sort of.
That douche, Haley says, reminding me why we're friends. She doesn't need details. If someone hurts me in any way, they're automatically on her shit list. It started in fifth grade, 2 years before Maya came along. We were those crybaby kids who bust out crying at the smallest shit.
Me because of Natasha, and Haley because she lost her mom to cancer. We rode the waves of grief together. That's why this weirdness between us doesn't make sense. What do you want to do, Star? She asks. I don't know. Before Khalil, I planned to cold shoulder Chris with a sting more powerful than a 90s R&B breakup song. But after Khalil, I'm more like a Taylor Swift song. No shade, I fucks with Tay-Tay, but she doesn't serve like 90s R&B on the angry girlfriend scale. I'm not happy with Chris, yet I miss him. I miss us. I need him so much that I'm willing to forget what he did. That's scary as fuck, too. Someone I've only been with for a year means that much to me? But Chris, he's different. You know what? I'll Beyonce him. Not as powerful as a 90s R&B breakup song, but stronger than a Taylor Swift. Yeah, that'll work. I tell Haley and Maya, I'll handle him. They move so I'm between them like they're my bodyguards, and we go to the door together. Chris bows to us. Ladies, move, Maya orders. Funny considering how much Chris towers over her. He looks at me with those baby blues. He got a tan over break. I used to tell him he was so pale he looked like a marshmallow. He hated that I compared him to food. I told him that's what he got for calling me caramel. It shut him up. Damn it, though. He's wearing the Space Jam 11s, too. I forgot we decided to wear them the first day back. They look good on him. Jordans are my weakness. Can't help it.
I just want to talk to my girl, he claims.
I don't know who that is, I say, Beyonce-ing him like a pro. He sighs through his nose.
Please, Star, can we at least talk about it?
I'm back to Taylor Swift because the please does it. I nod at Haley and Maya. You hurt her, and I'll kill you, Haley warns, and she and Maya go into class without me. Chris and I move away from the door. I lean against a locker and fold my arms. I'm listening, I say. A bass-heavy instrumental plays in his headphones, probably one of his beats.
I'm sorry for what happened. I should have talked to you first.
I cock my head. We did talk about it. A week before, remember?
I know. I know, and I heard you. I just wanted to be prepared in case...
You could push the right buttons and convince me to change my mind?
No.
His hands go up in surrender.
Star, you know, I wouldn't... That's not... I'm sorry, okay? I took it too far.
Understatement. The day before Big D's party, Chris and I were in Chris's ridiculously large room. The third floor of his parents' mansion is a suite for him, a perk of being the last born to empty nesters. I try to forget that he has an entire floor as big as my house and hired help that looks like me. Fooling around isn't new for us, and when Chris slipped his hand in my shorts, I didn't think anything of it. Then he got me going, and I really wasn't thinking at all. For real, my thought process went out the door. And right as I was at that moment, he stopped, reached into his pocket, and pulled out a condom. He raised his eyebrows at me, silently asking for an invitation to go all the way. All I could think about was those girls I see walking around Garden Heights, babies propped on their hips. Condom or no condom, shit happens. I went off on Chris. He knew I wasn't ready for that. We already talked about it, and yet he had a condom? He said he wanted to be responsible, but if I said I'm not ready, I'm not ready. I left his house pissed and horny, the absolute worst way to leave. My mom may have been right, though. She once said that after you go there with a guy,
It activates all these feelings, and you want to do it all the time. Chris and I went far enough that I noticed every single detail about his body now. His cute nostrils that flare when he sighs. His soft brown hair that my fingers love to explore. His gentle lips and his tongue that wets them every so often. The 5 freckles on his neck that are in the perfect spots for kissing. More than that, I remember the guy who spends almost every night on the phone with me, talking about nothing and everything. The one who loves to make me smile. Yeah, he pisses me off sometimes, and I'm sure I piss him off. But we mean something. We actually mean a lot. Fuckity fuck, fuck, fuck. I'm crumbling. Chris. He goes for a low blow and beatboxes an all too familiar boom, 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 boom. I point at him. Don't you dare. Now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel Air. He beatboxes the instrumental and pops his chest and booty to the rhythm. People pass by us laughing. A guy whistles suggestively. Someone shouts, "Shake that ass, Bryant!" My smile grows before I can stop it. The Fresh Prince isn't just my show. It's our show. Sophomore year, he followed my Tumblr and I followed him back. We knew of each other from school, but we didn't know each other. One Saturday, I reblogged a bunch of Fresh Prince gifts and clips. He liked and reblogged every single one. That Monday morning in the cafeteria, he paid for my Pop-Tarts and grape juice and said, "The first Aunt Viv was the best Aunt Viv." It was the beginning of us. Chris gets the Fresh Prince, which helps him get me. We once talked about how cool it was that Will remained himself in his new world. I slipped up and said I wish I could be like that at school. Chris said, "Why can't you, Fresh Princess?" Ever since, I don't have to decide which star I have to be with him. He likes both. Well, the parts I've shown him. Some things I can't reveal, like Natasha. Once you've seen how broken someone is, it's like seeing them naked. You can't look at them the same anymore. I like the way he looks at me now, as if I'm one of the best things in his life. He's one of the best things in mine, too. I can't lie. We get the "why is he dating her" stare that usually comes from rich white girls. Sometimes I wonder the same thing. Chris acts like those looks don't exist. When he does stuff like this, rapping and beatboxing in the middle of a busy hall just to make me smile, I forget about those looks, too. He starts the second verse, swaying his shoulders and looking at me. The worst part? His silly butt knows it's working. "In West Philadelphia, born and raised. Come on, babe, join in." He grabs my hands. 115 follows Khalil's hands with the flashlight. He orders Khalil to get out with his hands up. He barks at me to put my hands on the dashboard. I kneel beside my dead friend in the middle of the street with my hands raised. A cop, as white as Chris, points a gun at me. As white as Chris. I flinch and snatch away. Chris frowns. "Star, you okay?" Khalil opens the door. "You okay, Star?" Pow! There's blood. Too much blood. The second bell rings, jolting me back to normal Williamson, where I'm not normal Star. Chris leans down, his face in front of mine. My tears blur him. "Star?" It's a few tears, yeah. But I feel exposed. I turn to go to class and Chris grabs my arm. I yank away,
and whirl on him. His hands go up in surrender.
Sorry, I was...
I wipe my eyes and walk into the classroom. Chris is right behind me. Haley and Maya shoot him the dirtiest looks. I lower myself into the desk in front of Haley. She squeezes my shoulder. That jackwad. Nobody mentioned Khalil at school today. I hate to admit it because it's like throwing him the middle finger, but I'm relieved. Since basketball season is over, I leave when everybody else does. Probably for the first time in my life, I wish it wasn't the end of the day. I'm that much closer to talking to the cops. Haley and I trek across the parking lot, arm in arm. Maya has a driver to pick her up. Haley has her own car, and I have a brother with a car. The two of us always end up walking out together.
Are you absolutely sure you don't want me to kick Chris's ass? Haley asks.
I told her and Maya about Condom Gate, and as far as they're concerned, Chris is eternally banished to asshole land. Yes, I say for the 100th time, you're violent, Hales.
When it comes to my friends, possibly. Seriously, though, why would he even? God, boys and their fucking sex drive.
I snort. Is that why you and Luke haven't gotten together? She lightly elbows me.
Shut up.
I laugh. Why won't you admit you like him?
What makes you think I like him?
Really, Haley?
Whatever, star. This isn't about me. This is about you and your sex-driven boyfriend.
He's not sex-driven, I say.
Then what do you call it?
He was horny at that moment.
Same thing.
I try to keep a straight face, and she does too, but soon we're cracking up. God, it feels good to be normal, Star and Haley. Has me wondering if I imagined a change. We part at the halfway point to Haley's car and Seven's.
The ass-kicking offer is still on the table, she calls to me. Bye, Haley.
I walk off, rubbing my arms. Spring has decided to go through an identity crisis and get chilly on me. A few feet away, Seven keeps a hand on his car as he talks to his girlfriend, Layla. Him and that damn Mustang. He touches it more than he touches Layla. She obviously doesn't care. She plays with the dreadlock near his face that isn't pulled into his ponytail. Eye roll worthy. Some girls do too much. Can't she play with all them curls on her own head? Honestly, though, I don't have a problem with Layla. She's a geek like Seven, smart enough for Harvard, but Howard bound, and real sweet. She's one of the four black girls in the senior class, and if Seven just wants to date black girls, he picked a great one. I walk up to them and go,
"Hem, hem."
Seven keeps his eyes on Layla. Go sign Sakani out.
Can't, I lie. Mama didn't put me on the list.
Yes, she did. Go.
I fold my arms. I am not walking halfway across campus to get him and halfway back. We can get him when we're leaving. He side-eyes me. But I'm too tired for all that, and it's cold. Seven kisses Layla and goes around to the driver's side.
Acting like that's a long walk, he mumbles.
Acting like we can't get him when we're leaving, I say, and hop in.
He starts the car. This nice mix Chris made of Kanye and my other future husband, J. Cole, plays from Seven's iPod dock. He maneuvers through the parking lot traffic to Sakani School. Seven signs him out of his after-school program, and we leave.
I'm hungry, Sakani whines, not even 5 minutes out the parking lot.
Didn't they give you a snack in after school? Seven asks.
So? I'm still hungry.
Greedy butt,
Seven says, and Sakani kicks the back of his seat. Seven laughs.
Okay, okay. Maya asked me to bring some food to the clinic anyway. I'll get you something too.
He looks at Sakani in the rearview mirror.
Is that cool?
Seven freezes. He turns Chris's mix off and slows down.
What you turn the music off for? Sakani asks.
Shut up.
Seven hisses. We stop at a red light. A Riverton Hills patrol car pulls up beside us. Seven straightens up and stares ahead, barely blinking and gripping the steering wheel. His eyes move a little like he wants to look at the cop car. He swallows hard.
Come on, light, he prays. Come on.
I stare ahead and pray for the light to change, too. It finally turns green, and Seven lets the patrol car go first. His shoulders don't relax until we get on the freeway. Mine neither. We stop at this Chinese restaurant Mama loves and get food for all of us. She wants me to eat before I talk to the detectives. In Garden Heights, kids play in the streets. Sakani presses his face against my window and watches them. He won't play with them, though. Last time he played with some neighborhood kids, they called him White Boy, because he goes to Williamson. Black Jesus greets us from a mural on the side of the clinic. He has locks, like Seven. His arms stretch the width of the wall, and there are puffy white clouds behind him. Big letters above him remind us that Jesus loves you. Seven passes Black Jesus and goes into the parking lot behind the clinic. He punches in a code to open the gate and parks next to Mama's Camry. I get the tray of sodas, Seven gets the food, and Sakani doesn't take anything because he never takes anything. I hit the buzzer for the back door and wave up at the camera. The door opens into a sterile-smelling hall with bright white walls and white tile floors that reflect us. The hall takes us to the waiting room. A handful of people watch the news on the old box TV in the ceiling or read magazines that have been there since I was little. When this shaggy-haired man sees that we have food, he straightens up and sniffs hard, as if it's for him.
What y'all bringing up in here?
Miss Felicia asks at the front desk, stretching her neck to see. Mama comes from the other hallway in her plain yellow scrubs, following a teary-eyed boy and his mom. The boy sucks on a lollipop, a reward for surviving a shot.
There go my babies, Mama says when she sees us. And they got my food, too. Come on, let's go in the back. Save me some.
Miss Felicia calls after us. Mama tells her to hush. We set the food out on the break room table. Mama gets some paper plates and plastic utensils that she keeps in a cabinet for days like this. We say grace and dig in. Mama sits on the countertop and eats.
This is hitting the spot. Thank you, Seven, baby. I only had a bag of Cheetos today.
You didn't have lunch?
Sakani asks, with a mouth full of fried rice. Mama points her fork at him.
What did I tell you about talking with your mouth full? And for your information, no, I did not. I had a meeting on my lunch break. Now tell me about y'all. How was school?
Sakani always talks the longest because he gives every single detail. Seven says his day was fine. I'm as short with my... It was all right. Mama sips her soda.
Anything happen?
I freaked out when my boyfriend touched me, but...
Nope, nothing.
Miss Felicia comes to the door.
Lisa, sorry to bother you, but we have an issue up front.
I'm on break, Felicia. Don't you think I know that? But she asking for you.
It's Brenda.
Khalil's mama. My mom sets her plate down. She looks straight at me when she says, stay here. I'm hard-headed, though. I follow her to the waiting room. Miss Brenda sits with her face in her hands. Her hair is uncombed and her white shirt is dingy, almost brown. She has sores and scabs on her arms and legs. And since she's real light-skinned, they show up even more. Mama kneels in front of her. Bryn, hey.
Ms. Brenda moves her hands. Her red eyes remind me of what Khalil said when we were little, that his mama had turned into a dragon. He claimed that one day he'd become a knight and turn her back. It doesn't make sense that he sold drugs. I would have thought his broken heart wouldn't let him.
My baby,
his mama cries.
Lisa, my baby.
Mama sandwiches Ms. Brenda's hands between hers and rubs them, not caring that they're nasty looking. I know, Bryn.
They killed my baby.
I know.
They killed him.
I know.
Lord Jesus,
Ms. Felicia says from the doorway. Next to her, Seven puts his arm around Sakani. Some patients in the waiting room shake their heads.
But Bryn, you gotta get cleaned up,
Mama says. That's what he wanted.
I can't. My baby ain't here.
Yes, you can. You have Cameron, and he needs you. Your mama needs you.
Khalil needed you, I want to say. He waited for you and cried for you. But where were you? You don't get to cry now. Nuh-uh. It's too late. But she keeps crying, rocking and crying. Tammy and I can get you some help, Bryn, Mama says. But you gotta really want it this time.
I don't want to live like this no more.
I know. Mama waves Miss Felicia over and hands Miss Felicia her phone. Look through my contacts and find Tammy Harris's number. Call and tell her that her sister is here.
Bryn, when was the last time you ate?
I don't know. I don't. My baby.
Mama straightens up and rubs Miss Brenda's shoulder. I'm going to get you some food. I follow Mama back. She walks kind of fast but passes the food and goes to the counter. She leans on it with her back to me and bows her head, not saying a word. Everything I wanted to say in the waiting room comes bubbling out.
How come she gets to be upset? She wasn't there for Khalil. You know how many times he cried about her? Birthdays, Christmas, all that. Why does she get to cry now?
Star, please.
She hasn't acted like a mom to him. Now all of a sudden, he's her baby. It's bullshit.
Mama smacks the counter and I jump.
Shut up!
She screams. She turns around, tears streaking her face.
That wasn't some little friend of hers. That was her son. You hear me? Her son!
Her voice cracks.
She carried that boy, birthed that boy, and you have no right to judge her.
I have cotton mouth. Mama closes her eyes. She massages her forehead.
I'm sorry. Fix her a plate, baby, okay? Fix her a plate.
I do, and put a little extra of everything on it. I take it to Miss Brenda. She mumbles what sounds like thank you as she takes it. When she looks at me through the red haze, Khalil's eyes stare back at me, and I realize my mom's right. Miss Brenda is Khalil's mama, regardless.
6.
My mom and I arrive at the police station at 4:30 on the dot. A handful of cops talk on phones, type on computers, or stand around. Normal stuff like on Law and Order. But my breath catches. I count. 1, 2, 3, 4. I lose count around 12 because the guns in their holsters are all I can see. All of them, 2 of us. Mama squeezes my hand.
Breathe.
I didn't realize I had grabbed hers. I take a deep breath and another, and she nods with each one, saying, "That's it. You're okay. We're okay." Uncle Carlos comes over, and he and Mama lead me to his desk, where I sit down. I feel eyes on me from all around. The grip tightens around my lungs. Uncle Carlos hands me a sweating bottle of water. Mama puts it up to my lips. I take slow sips and look around Uncle Carlos's desk to avoid the curious eyes of the officers. He has almost as many pictures of me and Sakani on display as he has of his own kids. "I'm taking her home," Mama tells him. "I'm not putting her through this today. She's not ready."
"I understand, but she has to talk to them at some point, Lisa. She's a vital part of this investigation."
Mama sighs.
"Carlos, I get it," he says, in a noticeably lower voice. "Believe me, I do. Unfortunately, if we want this investigation done right, she has to talk to them. If not today, then another day."
Another day of waiting and wondering what's going to happen. I can't go through that. "I want to do it today," I mumble. "I want to get it over with." They look at me like they just remembered I'm here. Uncle Carlos kneels in front of me.
"Are you sure, baby girl?"
I nod before I lose my nerve. "All right," Mama says, "but I'm going with her."
"That's totally fine," Uncle Carlos says.
"I don't care if it's not fine," she looks at me. "She's not doing this alone." Those words feel as good as any hug I've ever gotten. Uncle Carlos keeps an arm around me and leads us to a small room that has nothing in it but a table and some chairs. An unseen air conditioner hums loudly, blasting freezing air into the room.
"All right," Uncle Carlos says. "I'll be outside, okay?"
"Okay," I say. He kisses my forehead with his usual two pecks. Mama takes my hand, and her tight squeeze tells me what she doesn't say out loud. "I got your back." We sit at the table. She's still holding my hand when the two detectives come in. A young white guy with slick black hair, and a Latina with lines around her mouth and a spiky haircut. Both of them wear guns on their waists. "Keep your hands visible. No sudden moves. Only speak when spoken to."
"Hi, Star and Mrs. Carter," the woman says, holding out her hand. "I'm Detective Gomez, and this is my partner, Detective Wilkes."
I let go of my mom's hand to shake the detective's hands. "Hello." My voice is changing already. It always happens around other people, whether I'm at Williamson or not. I don't talk like me or sound like me. I choose every word carefully and make sure I pronounce them well. I can never, ever let anyone think I'm ghetto.
"It's so nice to meet you both,"
Wilkes says. "Considering the circumstances, I wouldn't call it nice," says Mama. Wilkes' face and neck get extremely red.
"What he means is we've heard so much about you both," Gomez says. "Carlos always gushes about his wonderful family. We feel like we know you already."
She's laying it on extra thick. "Please, have a seat." Gomez points to a chair, and she and Wilkes sit across from us.
"Just so you know, you're being recorded, but it's simply so we can have Star's statement on record."
"Okay," I say. There it is again. All perky and shit. I'm never perky. Detective Gomez gives the date and time and the names of the people in the room and reminds us that we're being recorded. Wilkes scribbles in his notebook. Mama rubs my back. For a moment, there's only the sound of pencil on paper. "All right, then." Gomez adjusts herself in her chair and smiles, the lines around her mouth deepening. Don't be nervous, Star. You haven't done anything wrong. We just want to know what happened.
I know I haven't done anything wrong, I think, but it comes out as, yes, ma'am.
You're 16, right?
Yes, ma'am.
How long did you know Khalil?
Since I was 3. His grandmother used to babysit me.
Wow, she says, all teacher-like, stretching out the word, that's a long time. Can you tell us what happened the night of the incident?
You mean the night he was killed?
Shit.
Gomez's smile dims.
The lines around her mouth aren't as deep, but she says, the night of the incident, yes. Start where you feel comfortable.
I look at Mama. She nods.
My friend Kenya and I went to a house party hosted by a guy named Darius, I say. Thump, 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 I drum the table. Stop. No sudden moves. I lay my hands flat to keep them visible. He has one every spring break, I say. Khalil saw me, came over, and said hello.
Do you know why he was at the party?
Gomez asks.
Why does anybody go to a party? To party?
I assume it was for recreational purposes, I say. He and I talked about things going on in our lives.
What kind of things? She questions. His grandmother has cancer. I didn't know until he told me that evening.
I see, Gomez says. What happened after that?
A fight occurred at the party, so we left together in his car.
Khalil didn't have anything to do with the fight?
I raise an eyebrow.
Nah. Damn it. Proper English.
I sit up straight. I mean, no, ma'am. We were talking when the fight occurred.
Okay, so you two left. Where were you going?
He offered to take me home or to my father's grocery store. Before we could decide, 115 pulled us over.
Who? She asks.
The officer. That's his badge number, I say. I remember it.
Wilkes scribbles.
I see, Gomez says. Can you describe what happened next?
I don't think I'll ever forget what happened.
But saying it out loud, that's different. And hard. My eyes prickle. I blink, staring at the table. Mama rubs my back. Look up, Star.
My parents have this thing where they never want me or my brothers to talk to somebody without looking them in their eyes. They claim that a person's eyes say more than their mouth and that it goes both ways. If we look someone in their eyes and mean what we say, they should have little reason to doubt us.
I look at Gomez. Khalil pulled over to the side of the road and turned the ignition off, I say. 115 put his brights on. He approached the window and asked Khalil for his license and registration.
Did Khalil comply? Gomez asks.
He asked the officer why he pulled us over first. Then he showed his license and registration.
Did Khalil seem irate during this exchange?
Annoyed, not irate, I say. He felt that the cop was harassing him.
Did he tell you this?
No, but I could tell. I assumed the same thing myself.
Shit.
Gomez scoots closer. Maroon lipstick stains her teeth, and her breath smells like coffee.
And why was that?
Breathe. The room isn't hot. You're nervous.
Because we weren't doing anything wrong, I say. Khalil wasn't speeding or driving recklessly. It didn't seem like he had a reason to pull us over.
I see.
What happened next?
The officer forced Khalil out the car.
Forced?
She says.
Yes, ma'am. He pulled him out.
Because Khalil was hesitant, right? Mama makes this throaty sound, like she was about to say something but stopped herself. She purses her lips and rubs my back in circles. I remember what Daddy said. Don't let them put words in your mouth. No, ma'am, I say to Gomez. He was getting out on his own, and the officer yanked him the rest of the way. She says, I see again. But she didn't see it, so she probably doesn't believe it. What happened next? She asks. The officer patted Khalil down 3 times. 3? Yeah, I counted. Yes, ma'am. He didn't find anything. He then told Khalil to stay put while he ran his license and registration. But Khalil didn't stay put, did he? She says. He didn't pull the trigger on himself either. Shit, your fucking big mouth. The detectives glance at each other. A moment of silent conversation. The walls move in closer. The grip around my lungs returns. I pull my shirt away from my neck. I think we're done for today, Mama says, taking my hand as she starts to stand up. But Mrs. Carter, we're not finished. I don't care. Mom, I say, and she looks down at me. It's okay. I can do this. She gives them a glare similar to the one she gives me and my brothers when we've pushed her to her limit. She sits down, but holds on to my hand. Okay, Gomez says. So he patted Khalil down and told him he would check his license and registration. What next? Khalil opened the driver's side door and pow! 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 Blood. Tears crawl down my cheeks. I wipe them on my arm. The officer shot him. Do you, Gomez starts, but Mama holds a finger toward her. Could you please give her a second? She says. It sounds more like an order than a question. Gomez doesn't say anything. Wilkes scribbles some more. My mom wipes some of my tears for me. Whenever you're ready, she says. I swallow the lump in my throat and nod. Okay, Gomez says, and takes a deep breath. Do you know why Khalil came to the door, Star? I think he was coming to ask if I was okay. You think? I'm not a telepath. Yes, ma'am. He started asking, but didn't finish because the officer shot him in the back. More salty tears fall on my lips. Gomez leans across the table. We all want to get to the bottom of this, Star. We appreciate your cooperation. I understand this is hard right now. I wipe my face on my arm again. Yeah. Yeah. She smiles and says in that same sugary, sympathetic tone, Now, do you know if Khalil sold narcotics? Pause. What the fuck? My tears stop. For real, my eyes get dry with the quickness. Before I can say anything, my mom goes, What does that have to do with anything? It's only a question, Gomez says. Do you, Star? All the sympathy, the smiles, the understanding. This chick was baiting me. Investigating or justifying? I know the answer to her question. I knew it when I saw Khalil at the party. He never wore new shoes. And jewelry? Those little 99-cent chains he bought at the beauty supply store didn't count. Ms. Rosalie just confirmed it. But what the hell does that have to do with him getting murdered? Is that supposed to make all of this okay? Gomez tilts her head. Star, can you please answer the question? I refuse to make them feel better about killing my friend. I straighten up,
look Gomez dead in her eyes and say, I never saw him sell drugs or do drugs. But do you know if he sold them? She asks. He never told me he did, I say, which is true. Khalil never flat out admitted it to me. Do you have knowledge of him selling them? I heard things. Also true. She sighs. I see. Do you know if he was involved with the King Lords? No. The Garden Disciples? No. Did you consume any alcohol at the party? She asks. I know that move from Law and Order. She's trying to discredit me. No, I don't drink. Did Khalil? Well, wait one second, Mama says. Are y'all putting Khalil and Star on trial? Or the cop who killed him? Wilkes looks up from his notes. I don't quite understand, Mrs. Carter. Gomez sputters. You haven't asked my child about that cop yet, Mama says. You keep asking her about Khalil, like he's the reason he's dead. Like she said, he didn't pull the trigger on himself. We just want the whole picture, Mrs. Carter. That's all. 115 killed him, I say, and he wasn't doing anything wrong. How much of a bigger picture do you need? 15 minutes later, I leave the police station with my mom. Both of us know the same thing. This is going to be some bullshit. 7. Khalil's funeral is Friday, tomorrow, exactly 1 week since he died. I'm at school trying not to think about what he'll look like in the coffin, how many people will be there, what he'll look like in the coffin, if other people will know I was with him when he died, what he'll look like in the coffin. I'm failing at not thinking about it. On the Monday night news, they finally gave Khalil's name in the story about the shooting, but with a title added to it. Khalil Harris, a suspected drug dealer. They didn't mention that he was unarmed. They said that an unidentified witness had been questioned and that the police were still investigating. After what I told the cops, I'm not sure what's left to investigate. In the gym, everyone's changed into their blue shorts and gold Williamson t-shirts, but class hasn't started yet. To pass time, some of the girls challenged some of the boys to a basketball game. They're playing on one end of the gym, the floor squeaking as they run around. The girls are all, "Stop!" when the guys guard them, flirting, Williamson style. Haley, Maya, and I are in the bleachers on the other end. On the floor, some guys are supposedly dancing, trying to get their moves ready for prom. I say supposedly because there's no way that shit can be called dancing. Maya's boyfriend, Ryan, is the only one even close, and he's just doing the dab. It's his go-to move. He's a big, wide-shouldered linebacker, and it looks a little funny, but that's an advantage of being the sole black guy in class. You can look silly and still be cool. Chris is on the bottom bleacher, playing one of his mixes on his phone for them to dance to. He glances over his shoulder at me. I have two bodyguards who won't allow him near me. Maya on one side, cheering Ryan on, and Haley, who's laughing her ass off at Luke and recording him. They're still pissed at Chris. I'm honestly not. He made a mistake, and I forgive him. The Fresh Prince theme and his willingness to embarrass himself helped with that. But that moment he grabbed my hands, and I flashed back to that night, it's like I suddenly really, really realized that Chris is white, just like 115. And I know I'm sitting here next to my white best friend, but it's almost as if I'm giving Khalil, Daddy, Seven,
and every other black guy in my life a big, loud, fuck you, by having a white boyfriend. Chris didn't pull us over. He didn't shoot Khalil. But am I betraying who I am by dating him? I need to figure this out.
Oh my God, that's sickening, says Haley. She stopped recording to watch the basketball game. They're not even trying.
They're really not. The ball sails past the hoop from an attempted shot by Bridget Holloway. Either homegirl's hand-eye coordination is way off, or she missed that on purpose, because now Jackson Reynolds is showing her how to shoot. Basically, he's all up on her, and shirtless.
I don't know what's worse, Haley says. The fact that they're going soft on them because they're girls, or that the girls are letting them go soft on them. Equality in basketball, right, Hales? Maya says with a wink.
Yes. Wait. She eyes Maya suspiciously. Are you making fun of me, or are you serious, Shorty?
Both, I say, leaning back on my elbows, my belly pooching out my shirt, a food baby. We just left lunch, and the cafeteria had fried chicken, one of the foods Williamson gets right.
It's not even a real game, Hales, I tell her.
Nope, Maya pats my stomach. When are you due?
Same day as you.
Aw, we can raise our food offspring as siblings.
I know, right? I'm naming mine Fernando, I say.
Why Fernando? Maya asks.
Dunno. It sounds like a food baby name, especially when you roll the R.
I can't roll my R's.
She tries, but she makes some weird noise, spit flying, and I'm cracking up.
Haley points at the game. Look at that! It's that whole play-like-a-girl mindset that male gender uses to belittle women when we have as much athleticism as they do.
Oh, my Lord. She's seriously upset over this.
Take the ball to the hole! She hollers to the girls.
Maya catches my eye, hers glimmering sneakily, and it's middle school deja vu.
And don't be afraid to shoot the outside, Jay!
Maya shouts.
Just keep your head in the game, I say. Just keep your head in the game. And don't be afraid to shoot the outside, Jay, Maya sings. Just get your head in the game, I sing.
We bust out with Get Your Head in the Game from High School Musical. It'll be stuck in my head for days. We were obsessed with the movies around the same time as our Jonas Brothers obsession. Disney took all our parents' money. We're loud with it now. Haley's trying to glare at us. She snorts.
Come on!
She gets up and pulls me and Maya up, too.
Get your head in this game.
I'm thinking, oh, so you can drag me to play basketball during one of your feminist rages, but you can't follow my Tumblr because of Emmett Till? I don't know why I can't make myself bring it up. It's Tumblr. But then, it's Tumblr.
Hey, Haley says, we want to play.
No, we don't, Maya mutters. Haley nudges her. I don't want to play either. But for some reason, Haley makes decisions and Maya and I follow along. It's not like we planned it to be this way. Sometimes the shit just happens and one day you realize there's a leader among you and your friends. And it's not you.
Come on in, ladies.
Jackson beckons us into the game. There's always room for pretty girls. We'll try not to hurt you. Haley looks at me. I look at her. And we have the same deadpan expression that we've had mastered since fifth grade. Mouths slightly open, eyes ready to roll at any moment.
All righty then, I say. Let's play. Three on three,
Haley says as we take our positions. Girls versus boys, half court, first to 20.
Sorry, ladies, but me and my girls are going to handle this one, okay?
Bridget gives Haley some serious stank eye. She and her friends move to the sideline.
The dance party stops, and those guys come over, Chris included. He whispers something to Tyler, one of the boys who played in the previous game. Chris takes Tyler's place on the court. Jackson checks the ball to Haley. I run around my guard, Garrett, and Haley passes to me. No matter what's going on, when Haley, Maya, and I play together, it's rhythm, chemistry, and skill rolled into a ball of amazingness. Garrett's guarding me, but Chris runs up and elbows him aside. Garrett goes, "The hell, Bryant?"
"I've got her," Chris says.
He gets in his defensive stance. We're eye to eye as I dribble the ball.
"Hey,"
he says. "Hey." I do a chest pass to Maya, who's wide open for a jump shot. She makes it. 2-0.
"Good job, Yang,"
says Coach Myers. She's come out her office. All it takes is a hint of a real game, and she's in coaching mode. She reminds me of a fitness trainer on a reality TV show. She's petite, yet muscular, and God, that woman can yell. Garrett's at the baseline with the ball. Chris runs to get open. Stomach full, I have to push harder to stay on him. We're hip to hip, watching Garrett try to decide who to pass to. Our arms brush, and something in me is activated. My senses are suddenly consumed by Chris. His legs look so good in his gym shorts. He's wearing Old Spice, and even just from that little brush, his skin feels so soft.
"I miss you," he says.
No point in lying. "I miss you too." The ball sails his way. Chris catches it. Now I'm in my defensive stance, and we're eye to eye again as he dribbles. My gaze lowers to his lips. They're a little wet and begging me to kiss them. See, this is why I can never play ball with him. I get too distracted.
"Will you at least talk to me?" Chris asks.
"Defense, Carter!"
Coach yells. I focus on the ball and attempt to steal. Not quick enough. He gets around me and goes straight for the hoop, only to pass it to Jackson, who's open at the three-point line.
"Grant!"
Coach shouts for Haley. Haley runs over. Her fingertips graze the ball as it leaves Jackson's hand, changing its course. The ball goes flying. I go running. I catch it. Chris is behind me, the only thing between me and the hoop. Let me clarify, my butt is against his crotch, my back against his chest. I'm bumping up against him, trying to figure out how to get the ball in the hole. It sounds way dirtier than it actually is, especially in this position. I understand why Bridget missed shots, though.
"Star!"
Haley calls. She's open at the three. I bounce past it to her. She shoots, nails it, 5-0.
"Come on, boys,"
Maya taunts. "Is that all you can do?" Coach claps.
"Good job, good job."
Jackson's at the baseline. He passes to Chris. Chris chest passes it back to him.
"I don't get it," Chris says. "You practically freaked out the other day in the hall. What's going on?"
Garrett passes to Chris. I get in my defensive stance, eyes on the ball, not on Chris. Cannot look at Chris. My eyes will give me away.
"Talk to me," he says.
I attempt to steal again. No luck. "Play the game," I say. Chris goes left, quickly changes direction, and goes right. I try to stay on him, but my heavy stomach slows me down. He gets to the hoop and makes the layup. It's good. 5-2.
"Damn it, Star!"
Haley yells, recovering the ball. She passes it to me.
"Hustle! Pretend the ball is some fried chicken. Bet you'll stay on it then."
What the actual fuck?
The world surges forward without me. I hold the ball and stare at Haley as she jogs away. Blue-streaked hair bouncing behind her.
I can't believe she said.
She couldn't have. No way. The ball falls out my hands. I walk off the court. I'm breathing hard. and my eyes burn. The smell of post-game funk lingers in the girls' locker room. It's my place of solace when we lose a game, where I can cry or cuss if I want. I pace from one side of the lockers to the other. Haley and Maya rush in, out of breath.
What's up with you? Haley asks.
Me? I say, my voice bouncing off the lockers.
What the hell was that comment?
Lighten up, it was only game talk.
A fried chicken joke was only game talk? Really?
I ask.
It's fried chicken day, she says. You and Maya were just joking about it. What are you trying to say?
I keep pacing. Her eyes widen. Oh, my God. You think I was being racist? I look at her.
You made a fried chicken comment to the only black girl in the room. What do you think?
Holy shit, Star. Seriously? After everything we've been through, you think I'm a racist? Really?
You can say something racist and not be a racist.
Is something else going on, Star? Maya says.
Why does everyone keep asking me that?
I snap.
Because you're acting so weird lately.
Haley snaps back. She looks at me and asks, does this have something to do with the police shooting that drug dealer in your neighborhood?
What?
I heard about it on the news, she says. And I know you're into that sort of thing now.
That sort of thing? What the fuck is that sort of thing?
And then they said the drug dealer's name was Khalil, she says, and exchanges a look with Maya.
We've wanted to ask if it was the Khalil who used to come to your birthday parties,
Maya adds.
We didn't know how, though.
The drug dealer. That's how they see him. It doesn't matter that he's suspected of doing it. Drug dealer is louder than suspected ever will be. If it's revealed that I was in the car, what will that make me? The thug ghetto girl with the drug dealer? What will my teachers think about me? My friends? The whole fucking world, possibly. I close my eyes. Khalil stares at the sky.
Mind your business, Star, he says.
I swallow and whisper. I don't know that, Khalil. It's a betrayal worse than dating a white boy. I fucking deny him. Damn near erasing every laugh we shared, every hug, every tear, every second we spent together. A million I'm sorries sound in my head. And I hope they reach Khalil, wherever he is. Yet they'll never be enough. But I had to do it. I had to.
Then what is it?
Haley asks. Is this like
Natasha's anniversary or something?
I stare at the ceiling and blink fast to keep from bawling. Besides my brothers and the teachers, Haley and Maya are the only people at Williamson who know about Natasha. I don't want all the pity.
Mom's anniversary was a few weeks ago, Haley says. I was in a shitty mood for days.
I understand if you're upset, but to accuse me of being racist, Star, how can you even? I blink faster. God, I'm pushing her away, Chris away. Hell, do I deserve them? I don't talk about Natasha, and I just flat out denied Khalil. I could have been the one killed instead of them. I don't have the decency to keep their memories alive, yet I'm supposed to be their best friend. I cover my mouth. It doesn't stop the sob. It's loud and echoes off the walls. One follows it, and another, and another. Maya and Haley rub my back and shoulders. Coach Myers rushes in.
Carter?
Haley looks at her and says, Natasha. Coach nods heavily.
Carter, Go see Ms. Lawrence.
What? No. She's sending me to the school shrink?
All the teachers know about poor Star, who saw her friend die when she was 10. I used to bust out crying all the time, and that was always their go-to line. See Ms. Lawrence. I wipe my eyes. Coach, I'm okay.
No, you're not.
She pulls a hall pass from her pocket and holds it toward me.
Go talk to her. It'll help you feel better.
No, it won't. But I know what will. I take the pass, grab my backpack out my locker, and go back into the gym. My classmates follow me with their eyes as I hurry toward the doors. Chris calls out for me. I speed up. They probably heard me crying. Great. What's worse than being the angry black girl? The weak black girl. By the time I get to the main office, I've dried my eyes and my face completely.
Good afternoon, Ms. Carter,
Dr. Davis, the headmaster, says. He's leaving as I'm going in and doesn't wait for my response. Does he know all the students by name, or just the ones who are black, like him? I hate that I think about stuff like that now. His secretary, Mrs. Lindsay, greets me with a smile and asks how she can assist me. I need to call someone to come get me, I say. I don't feel good. I call Uncle Carlos. My parents would ask too many questions. A limb has to be missing for them to take me out of school. I only have to tell Uncle Carlos that I have cramps, and he'll pick me up. Feminine problems. The key to ending an Uncle Carlos interrogation. Luckily, he's on lunch break. He signs me out, and I hold my stomach for added effect. As we leave, he asks if I want some froyo. I say yeah. And a short while later, we're going into a shop that's walking distance from Williamson. It's in a brand new mini mall that should be called Hipster Heaven, full of stores you'd never find in Garden Heights. On one side of the froyo place, there's Indie Urban Style, and on the other side, Dapper Dog, where you can buy outfits for your dog. Clothes. For a dog. What kind of fool would I be, dressing bricks in a linen shirt and jeans? On a serious tip, white people are crazy for their dogs. We fill our cups with yogurt. At the toppings bar, Uncle Carlos breaks out into his froyo rap.
I'm getting froyo yo, froyo yo yo.
He loves his froyo. It's kind of adorable. We take a booth in a corner that's got a lime green table and hot pink seats. You know, typical froyo decor. Uncle Carlos looks over into my cup.
Did you seriously ruin perfectly good froyo with Cap'n Crunch?
You can't talk, I say. Oreos, Uncle Carlos? Really? And they're not even the golden Oreos, which are by far the superior Oreos. You got the regular ones. Ew. He devours a spoonful and says,
You're weird.
You're weird.
So cramps, huh?
He says. Shit, I almost forgot about that. I hold my stomach and groan. Yeah, they're real bad today. I know who won't win an Oscar anytime soon. Uncle Carlos gives me his hard detective stare. I groan again. This one sounds a little more believable. He raises his eyebrows. His phone rings in his jacket pocket. He sticks another spoonful of froyo in his mouth and checks it.
It's your mom calling me back, he says around the spoon.
He holds the phone with his cheek and shoulder.
Hey, Lisa, you get my message?
Shit.
She's not feeling good, Uncle Carlos says. She's got, you know, feminine problems.
Her response is loud but muffled. Shit. Shit. Uncle Carlos holds the nape of his neck and slowly releases a long, deep breath. He turns into a little boy when Mama raises her voice at him, and he's supposed to be the oldest.
Okay. Okay. I hear you, he says. Here. You talk to her.
Shit, shit, shit. He passes me the piece of dynamite formerly known as his phone. There's an explosion of questioning as soon as I say, hello? Cramps, Star, really? She says. They're bad, Mommy, I whine, lying my butt off. Girl, please, I went to class in labor with you, she says. I pay too much money for you to go to Williamson so you can leave because of cramps. I almost point out that I get a scholarship, too, but nah. She'd become the first person in history to hit someone through a phone. Did something happen? She asks. No. Is it Khalil? She asks. I sigh. This time tomorrow, I'll be staring at him in a coffin. Star? She says. Nothing happened. Miss Felicia calls for her in the background. Look, I gotta go, she says. Carlos will take you home. Lock the door, stay inside, and don't let anybody in. You hear me? Those aren't zombie survival tips, just normal instructions for latchkey kids in Garden Heights. I can't let Seven and Sakani in? Great. Oh, somebody's trying to be funny. Now I know you ain't feeling bad. We'll talk later. I love you. Mwah! It takes a lot of nerve to go off on somebody, call them out, and tell them you love them within a span of 5 minutes. I tell her I love her too, and pass Uncle Carlos his phone.
All right, baby girl, he says, spill it.
I stuff some froyo in my mouth. It's melting already. Like I said, cramps.
I'm not buying that, and let's be clear about something. You only get one Uncle Carlos get me out of school card per school year, and you're using it right now.
You got me in December, remember? For cramps also. I didn't lie about those. They were a bitch that day.
All right, one per calendar year, he clarifies.
I smile.
But you gotta give me a little more to work with, so talk.
I push Cap'n Crunch around my froyo. Khalil's funeral is tomorrow.
I know.
I don't know if I should go.
What? Why?
Because, I say, I hadn't seen him in months before the party.
You still should go, he says. You'll regret it if you don't. I thought about going. Not sure if that's a good idea, considering.
Silence. Are you really friends with that cop? I ask.
I wouldn't say friends, no. Colleagues.
But you're on a first name basis, right?
Yes, he says.
I stare at my cup. Uncle Carlos was my first dad in some ways. Daddy went to prison around the time I realized that Mommy and Daddy weren't just names, but they meant something. I talked to Daddy on the phone every week, but he didn't want me and Seven to ever set foot in a prison. So I didn't see him. I saw Uncle Carlos, though. He fulfilled the role and then some. Once I asked if I could call him Daddy. He said no. Because I already had one. But being my uncle was the best thing he could ever be. Ever since, uncle has meant almost as much as daddy. My uncle. On a first name basis with that cop.
Baby girl, I don't know what to say.
His voice is gruff.
I wish I could. I'm sorry this happened. I am.
Why haven't they arrested him?
Cases like this are difficult.
It's not that difficult, I say. He killed Khalil.
I know, he says, and wipes his face. I know.
Would you have killed him? He looks at me.
Star, I can't answer that.
Yeah, you can.
No, I can't. I'd like to think I wouldn't have, But it's hard to say unless you're in that situation, feeling what that officer is feeling.
He pointed his gun at me, I blurt out.
What?
My eyes prickle like crazy. While we were waiting on help to show up, I say, my words wobbling, he kept it on me until somebody else got there, like I was a threat. I wasn't the one with the gun.
Uncle Carlo stares at me for the longest time.
Baby girl.
He reaches for my hand. He squeezes it and moves to my side of the table. His arm goes around me and I bury my face in his rib cage, tears and snot wetting his shirt.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
He kisses my hair with each apology.
But I know that's not enough.
8. Funerals aren't for dead people. They're for the living. I doubt Khalil cares what songs are sung or what the preacher says about him. He's in a casket. Nothing can change that. My family and I leave 30 minutes before the funeral starts, but the parking lot at Christ Temple Church is already full. Some kids from Khalil's school stand around in R.I.P. Khalil t-shirts with his face on them. A guy tried to sell some to us yesterday, but Mama said we weren't wearing them today. T-shirts are for the streets, not for church. So here we are, getting out the car in our dresses and suits. My parents hold hands and walk in front of me and my brothers. We used to go to Christ Temple when I was younger, but Mama got tired of how people here act like their shit don't stank, and now we go to this diverse church in Riverton Hills. Way too many people go there, and praise and worship is led by a white guy on guitar. Oh, and service lasts less than an hour. Going back in Christ Temple is like when you go back to your old elementary school after you've been to high school. When you were younger, it seemed big, but when you go back, you realize how small it is. People fill up the tiny foyer. It has cranberry-colored carpet and two burgundy high-back chairs. One time, Mama brought me out here because I was acting up. She made me sit in one of those chairs and told me not to move until service was over. I didn't. A painting of the pastor hung above the chairs, and I could have sworn he was watching me. All these years later, and they still have that creepy painting up. There's a line to sign a book for Khalil's family, and another line to go into the sanctuary. To see him. I catch a glimpse of the white casket at the front of the sanctuary. But I can't make myself try to see more than that. I'll see him, eventually. But I don't know. I want to wait until I don't have any other choice. Pastor Eldridge greets people in the doorway of the sanctuary. He's wearing a long white robe with gold crosses on it. He smiles at everyone. I don't know why they made him look so creepy in that painting. He's not creepy at all. Mama glances back at me, Seven and Sakani, like she's making sure we look nice. Then she and Daddy go up to Pastor Eldridge. Morning, Pastor, she says.
Lisa, so good to see you.
He kisses her cheek and shakes Daddy's hand.
Maverick, good to see you as well. We miss y'all around here.
I bet y'all do,
Daddy mumbles. Another reason we left Christ Temple. Daddy doesn't like that they take up so many offerings. But he doesn't even go to our diverse church.
And these must be the children,
Pastor Eldridge says. He shakes Seven's and Sakani's hands and kisses my cheek. I feel more of his bristly mustache than anything.
Y'all sure have grown since I last saw you. I remember when the little one was an itty-bitty thing wrapped up in a blanket. How's your mama doing, Lisa?
She's good. She misses coming here, but the drive is a little long for her. I side-eye the hell
excuse me, heck, we're in church, out of her. Nana stopped coming to Christ Temple because of some incident between her and Mother Wilson over Deacon Rankin. It ended with Nana storming off from the church picnic, banana pudding in hand. That's all I know, though.
We understand, says Pastor Eldridge. Let her know we're praying for her.
He looks at me with an expression I know too well. Pity.
Miss Rosalie told me you were with Khalil when this happened. I'm so sorry you had to witness it.
Thank you. It's weird saying that, like I'm stealing sympathy from Khalil's family. Mama grabs my hand. We're gonna find some seats. Nice talking to you, Pastor. Daddy wraps his arm around me, and the three of us walk into the sanctuary together. My legs tremble, and a wave of nausea hits me, and we aren't even at the front of the viewing line yet. People go up to the casket in twos, so I can't see Khalil at all. Soon there are six people in front of us. Four. Two. I keep my eyes closed the whole time with the last two. Then it's our turn. My parents lead me up. Baby, open your eyes, Mama says. I do. It looks more like a mannequin than Khalil in the casket. His skin is darker, and his lips are pinker than they should be because of the makeup. Khalil would have had a fit if he knew they put that on him. He's wearing a white suit and a gold cross pendant. The real Khalil had dimples. This mannequin version of him doesn't. Mama brushes tears from her eyes. Daddy shakes his head. Seven and Sakani stare. That's not Khalil, I tell myself. Like it wasn't Natasha. Natasha's mannequin wore a white dress with pink and yellow flowers all over it. It had on makeup, too. Mama had told me, see, she looks asleep. But when I squeezed her hand, her eyes never opened. Daddy carried me out the sanctuary as I screamed for her to wake up. We move so the next set of people can look at Khalil's mannequin. An usher is about to direct us to some seats, but this lady with natural twists gestures toward the front row of the friend side, right in front of her. No clue who she is, but she must be somebody if she's giving orders like that. And she must know something about me, if she thinks my family deserves the front row. We take our seats, and I focus on the flowers instead. There's a big heart made out of red and white roses, a K made out of calla lilies, and an arrangement of flowers in orange and green, his favorite colors. When I run out of flowers, I look at the funeral program. It's full of pictures of Khalil, from the time he was a curly-haired baby up until a few weeks ago with friends I don't recognize. There are pictures of me and him from years ago, and one with us and Natasha. All three of us smile, trying to look gangster with our peace signs. The hood trio, tighter than the inside of Voldemort's nose. Now I'm the only one left. I close the program.
Let us stand.
Pastor Eldridge's voice echoes throughout the sanctuary. The organist starts playing and everyone stands.
And Jesus said, do not let your hearts be troubled, he says, coming down the aisle. You believe in God, believe also in me.
Miss Rosalie marches behind him. Cameron walks alongside her, gripping her hand. Tears stain his chubby cheeks. He's only 9, a year older than Sakani. Had one of those bullets hit me, that could have been my little brother crying like that. Khalil's Aunt Tammy holds Miss Rosalie's other hand.
Miss Brenda is wailing behind them, wearing a black dress that once belonged to Mama. Her hair has been combed into a ponytail. Two guys, I think they're Khalil's cousins, hold her up. It's easier to look at the casket.
My father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I am going there to prepare a place for you?
Pastor Eldridge says.
And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am.
At Natasha's funeral, her mama passed out when she saw her in the casket. Somehow, Khalil's mama and grandma don't.
I want to make one thing clear today,
Pastor Eldridge says, once everyone is seated.
No matter the circumstances, this is a home-going celebration. Weeping may endure for a night, but how many of you know that joy?
He doesn't even finish, and people shout. The choir sings upbeat songs, and almost everyone claps and praises Jesus. Mama sings along and waves her hands. Khalil's grandma and auntie clap and sing too. A praise break even starts, and people run around the sanctuary and do the Holy Ghost two-step, as Seven and I call it. Their feet moving like James Brown, and their bent arms flapping like chicken wings.
But if Khalil's not celebrating, how the hell can they? And why praise Jesus, since he let Khalil get shot in the first place?
I put my face in my hands, hoping to drown out the drums, the horns, the shouting. This shit doesn't make any sense. After all that praising, some of Khalil's classmates, the ones who were in the parking lot in the t-shirts, make a presentation. They give his family the cap and gown Khalil would have worn in a few months and cry as they tell funny stories I'd never heard. Yet I'm the one in the front row on the friend's side. I'm such a fucking phony. Next, the lady with the twists goes up to the podium. Her black pencil skirt and blazer are more professional-looking than church-looking, and she's wearing an R.I.P. Khalil t-shirt, too.
Good morning, she says, and everyone responds. My name is April Ofra, and I'm with Just Us for Justice. We are a small organization here in Garden Heights that advocates for police accountability. As we say farewell to Khalil, we find our hearts burdened with the harsh truth of how he lost his life. Just before the start of this service, I was informed that despite a credible eyewitness account, the police department has no intentions of arresting the officer who murdered this young man.
What? I say, as people murmur around the sanctuary. Everything I told them? And they're not arresting him?
What they don't want you to know, Miss Ofra says, is that Khalil was unarmed at the time of his murder.
People really start talking then. A couple of folks yell out, including one person who's bold enough to shout,
"This is bullshit!"
in a church.
We won't give up until Khalil receives justice, Miss Ofra says over the talking. I ask you to join us and Khalil's family after the service for a peaceful march to the cemetery. Our route happens to pass the police station. Khalil was silenced, but let's join together and make our voices heard for him. Thank you.
The congregation gives her a standing ovation. As she returns to her seat, she glances at me. If Ms. Rosalie told the pastor I was with Khalil, she probably told this lady, too. I bet she wants to talk. Pastor Eldridge just about preaches Khalil into heaven. I'm not saying Khalil didn't make it to heaven. I don't know. But Pastor Eldridge tries to make sure he gets there. He sweats and breathes so hard I get tired looking at him. At the end of the eulogy, he says,
If anybody wishes to view the body, Now is the...
He stares at the back of the church. Murmurs bubble around the sanctuary. Mama looks back. What in the world?
King and a bunch of his boys post up in the back in their gray clothes and bandanas. King has his arm hooked around a lady in a tight black dress that barely covers her thighs. She has way too much weave in her head. For real. It comes to her ass. And way too much makeup on.
Seven turns back around. I wouldn't want to see my mama looking like that either.
But why are they here?
King Lords only show up at King Lord funerals.
Pastor Eldridge clears his throat.
As I was saying, if anyone wishes to view the body, now is the time.
King and his boys swagger down the aisle. Everybody stares. Aisha walks alongside him, all proud and shit, not realizing she looks a hot mess. She glances at my parents and smirks, and I can't stand her ass. I mean, not just because of how she treats Seven, but because every time she shows up, there's suddenly an unspoken tension between my parents. Like now, Mama shifts her shoulder so it's not as close to Daddy, and his jaw is clenched. She's the Achilles heel of their marriage, and it's only noticeable if you've been watching it for 16 years, like I have. King, Aisha, and the rest of them go up to the casket. One of King's boys hands him a folded gray bandana, and he lays it across Khalil's chest. My heart stops. Khalil was a King Lord, too? Miss Rosalie jumps up.
Like hell you will!
She marches to the coffin and snatches the bandana off Khalil. She starts toward King, but Daddy catches her halfway and holds her back.
Get out of here, you demon!
She screams.
And take this mess with you!
She throws the bandana at the back of King's head. He stills. Slowly, he turns around.
Now look, bitch. Hey!
Daddy says.
King man, just go. Leave, Ike.
Yo, hag, Aisha snarls. Got some nerve treating my man like this after he offered to pay for this funeral?
He can keep his filthy money, Miss Rosalie says. And you can take your behind right out the door, too, coming in the Lord's house looking like the prostitute you are.
Seven shakes his head. It's no secret that my big brother is the result of a for-hire session Daddy had with Aisha after a fight with Mama. Aisha was King's girl, but he told her to hook Maverick up, not knowing Seven would come along looking exactly like Daddy. Fucked up. I know. Mama reaches behind me and rubs Seven's back. There are rare times when Seven's not around and Mama thinks Sekani and I can't hear her that she'll tell Daddy, I still can't believe you slept with that nasty hoe. But Seven can't be around. When he's around, none of that matters. She loves him more than she hates Aisha. The King Lords leave. And conversations break out all around. Daddy leads Miss Rosalie to her seat. She's so mad she's shaking. I look at the mannequin in the coffin. All those horror stories Daddy told us about gangbanging. And Khalil became a King Lord? How could he even think about doing that? It doesn't make sense, though. He had green in his car. That's what garden disciples do, not King Lords, and he didn't run to help out with the fight at Big D's party. But the bandana. Daddy once said that's a King Lord tradition. They crown their fallen comrades by putting a folded bandana on the body, as if to say they're going into heaven repping their set. Khalil must have joined to get that honor. I could have talked him out of it. I know it. But I abandoned him. Fuck the friend side. I shouldn't even be at his funeral. Daddy stays with Ms. Rosalie for the rest of the service and later helps her when the family follows the casket out.
Aunt Tammy motions us over to join them.
Thank you for being here, she tells me. You meant a lot to Khalil. I hope you know that.
My throat tightens too much for me to tell her he means a lot to me, too.
We follow the casket with the family. Just about everyone we pass has tears in their eyes. For Khalil. He really is in that casket, and he's not coming back. I've never told anyone, but Khalil was my first crush. He unknowingly introduced me to stomach butterflies, and later heartbreak when he got his own crush on Imani Anderson, a high schooler who wasn't even thinking about fourth grade him. I worried about my appearance for the first time around him. But fuck the crush. He was one of the best friends I ever had, no matter if we saw each other every day or once a year. Time didn't compare to all the shit we went through together. And now he's in a casket. Like Natasha. Big fat tears fall from my eyes, and I sob. A loud, nasty, ugly sob that everybody hears and sees as I come up the aisle. They left me, I cry. Mama wraps her arm around me and presses my head onto her shoulder.
I know, baby, but we're here. We aren't going anywhere.
Warmth brushes my face and I know we're outside. All of the voices and noises make me look. There are more people out here than in the church, holding posters with Khalil's face on them and signs that say, "Justice for Khalil." His classmates have posters saying, "Am I next?" and "Enough is enough." News vans with tall antennas are parked across the street. I bury my face in Mama's shoulder again. People, I don't know who, pat my back and tell me it'll be okay. I can tell when it's Daddy who's rubbing my back without him even saying anything.
"We gonna stay and march, baby," he tells Mama. "I want Seven and Sakani to be a part of this."
Yeah, I'm taking her home. How are y'all getting back?
"We can walk to the store. I gotta open up anyway."
He kisses my hair.
"I love you, baby girl. Get some rest, aight?"
Heels clack toward us. Then someone says,
"Hi, Mr. and Mrs. Carter. I'm April Ofra with Just Us for Justice."
Mama tenses up and pulls me closer. "How may we help you?" She lowers her voice and says,
"Khalil's grandmother told me that Star is the one who was with Khalil when this happened. I know she gave a statement to the police, and I want to commend her on her bravery. This is a difficult situation, and that must have taken a lot of strength."
"Yeah, it did," Daddy says.
I move my head off Mama's shoulder. Miss Ofra shifts her weight from foot to foot and fumbles with her fingers. My parents aren't helping with the hard looks they're giving her.
"We all want the same thing," she says, "justice for Khalil."
"Excuse me, Miss Ofra," Mama says, "but as much as I want that, I want my daughter to have some peace and privacy." Mama looks at the news vans across the street. Miss Ofra glances back at them.
"Oh," she says, "oh no, 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 we weren't, I wasn't, I don't want to put Star out there like that. Quite the opposite, actually. I want to protect her privacy."
Mama loosens her hold. "I see."
"Star offers a unique perspective in this, one you don't get a lot with these cases, and I want to make sure her rights are protected and that her voice is heard. But without her being
exploited,"
Daddy asks.
"Pimped?"
"Exactly. This case is about to gain national media attention, but I don't want it to be at her expense."
She hands each of us a business card.
"Besides being an advocate, I'm also an attorney. Just Us for Justice isn't providing the Harris family with legal representation. Someone else is doing that. We're simply rallying behind them. However, I'm available and willing to represent Star on my own. Whenever you're ready, please give me a call, and I am so sorry for your loss.
She disappears into the crowd. Call her when I'm ready, huh? I'm not sure I'll ever be ready for the shit that's about to happen.
9. My brothers come home with a message. Daddy's spending the night at the store. He also leaves instructions for us. Stay inside. A chain-link fence surrounds our house. Seven puts the big lock on the gate, the one we use when we go out of town. I bring Bricks inside. He doesn't know how to act, walking around in circles and jumping on the furniture. Mama doesn't say anything until he gets on her good sofa in the living room.
Hey! She snaps her fingers at him. Get your big behind off my furniture! You crazy?
He whimpers and scurries over to me. The sun sets. We're in the middle of saying grace over pot roast and potatoes when the first gunshots ring out. We open our eyes. Sikani flinches. I'm used to gunshots, but these are louder, faster. One barely sounds off before another's right behind it.
Machine guns, says Seven.
More shots follow. Take your dinner to the den, Mama says, getting up from the table, and sit on the floor. Bullets don't know where they're supposed to go.
Seven gets up too. Ma, I can.
Seven, den, she says.
But,
Seven! She breaks his name down. I'm turning the lights off, baby, okay? Please, go to the den. He gives in.
All right.
When Daddy isn't home, Seven acts like he's the man of the house by default. Mama always has to break his name down and put him in his place. I grab my plate and Mama's and head for the den, the one room without exterior walls. Bricks is right behind me, but he always follows food. The hallway darkens as Mama turns off the lights throughout the house. We have one of those old-school big-screen TVs in the den. It's Daddy's prized possession. We crowd around it, and Seven turns on the news, lighting up the den. There are at least 100 people gathered on Magnolia Avenue. They chant for justice and hold signs, fists high in the air for black power. Mama comes in, talking on the phone. All right, Mrs. Pearl, as long as you're sure. Just remember, we got enough room over here for you if you don't feel comfortable being alone. I'll check in later. Mrs. Pearl is this elderly lady who lives by herself across the street. Mama checks on her all the time. She says Mrs. Pearl needs to know that somebody cares. Mama sits next to me. Sikani rests his head in her lap. Bricks mimics him and puts his head in my lap, licking my fingers.
Are they mad 'cause Khalil died?
Sikani asks. Mama brushes her fingers through his high-top fade.
Yeah, baby, we all are.
But they're really mad that Khalil was unarmed. Can't be a coincidence this is happening after Miss Ofra announced that at his funeral. The cops respond to the chants with tear gas that blankets the crowd in a white cloud. The news cuts to footage inside the crowd of people running and screaming.
Damn, Seven says.
Sikani buries his face in Mama's thigh. I feed Bricks a piece of my pot roast. The clenching in my stomach won't let me eat. Sirens wail outside. The news shows 3 patrol cars that have been set ablaze at the police precinct, about a 5-minute drive away from us. A gas station near the freeway gets looted, and the owner, this Indian man, staggers around bloody, saying he didn't have anything to do with Khalil's death. A line of cops guard the Walmart on the east side. My neighborhood is a war zone. Chris texts to see if I'm okay, and I immediately feel like shit for avoiding him, Beyonce-ing him, and everything else. I would apologize, but texting I'm sorry, combined with every emoji in the world,
isn't the same as saying it face to face. I do let him know I'm okay, though. Maya and Haley call, asking about the store, the house, my family, me. Neither of them mention the fried chicken drama. It's weird talking to them about Garden Heights. We never do. I'm always afraid one of them will call it the ghetto. I get it. Garden Heights is the ghetto, so it wouldn't be a lie. But it's like when I was 9 and Seven and I got into one of our fights. He went for a low blow and called me Shorty McShortShort. A lame insult now when I think about it, but it tore me up back then. I knew there was a possibility I was short. Everybody else was taller than I was, and I could call myself short if I wanted. It became an uncomfortable truth when Seven said it. I can call Garden Heights the ghetto all I want. Nobody else can. Mama stays on her phone, too, checking on some neighbors and getting calls from others who are checking on us. Ms. Jones down the street says that she and her 4 kids are holed up in their den like we are. Mr. Charles next door says that if the power goes out, we can use his generator. Uncle Carlos checks on us, too. Nana takes the phone and tells Mama to bring us out there, like we're about to go through the shit to get out of it. Daddy calls and says the store is all right. It doesn't stop me from tensing up every time the news mentions a business that's been attacked. The news does more than give Khalil's name now. They show his picture, too. They only call me the witness. Sometimes, the 16-year-old black female witness. The police chief appears on screen and says what I was afraid he'd say. We have taken into consideration the evidence as well as the statement given by the witness, and as of now, we see no reason to arrest the officer. Mama and Seven glance at me. They don't say anything with Sakani right here. They don't have to. All of this is my fault. The riots, gunshots, tear gas, all of it are ultimately my fault. I forgot to tell the cops that Khalil got out with his hands up. I didn't mention that the officer pointed his gun at me. I didn't say something right, and now that cop's not getting arrested. But while the riots are my fault, the news basically makes it sound like it's Khalil's fault he died.
There are multiple reports that a gun was found in the car, the anchor claims. There is also suspicion that the victim was a drug dealer as well as a gang member. Officials have not confirmed if any of this is true.
The gun stuff can't be true. When I asked Khalil if he had anything in the car, he said no. He also wouldn't say if he was a drug dealer or not, and he didn't even mention the gangbanging stuff. Does it matter, though? He didn't deserve to die.
Sakani and Brick start breathing deeply around the same time, fast asleep. That's not an option for me with the helicopters, the gunshots, and the sirens. Mama and Seven stay up, too. Around 4 in the morning, when it's quieted down, Daddy comes in, bleary-eyed and yawning.
They didn't hit Marigold, he says,
between bites of pot roast at the kitchen table.
Looks like they're keeping it mostly on the east side, near where he was killed. For now, at least.
For now, Mama repeats.
Daddy runs his hand over his face.
Yeah, I don't know what's gonna stop them from coming this way, shit. Much as I understand it, I dread it if they do.
We can't stay here, Maverick, she says, and her voice is shaky, like she's been holding something in this entire time and is just now letting it out. This won't get better. It'll get worse.
Daddy reaches for her hand. She lets him take it, and he pulls her onto his lap. Daddy wraps his arms around her and kisses the back of her head.
We'll be all right.
He sends me and Seven to bed. Somehow I fall asleep. Natasha runs into the store again.
Star, come on!
Her braids have dirt in them,
and her once fat cheeks are sunken. Blood soaks through her clothes. I step back. She runs up to me and grabs my hand. Hers feels icy, like it did in her coffin. "Come on," she tugs at me. "Come on." She pulls me toward the door and my feet move against my will. "Stop," I say. "Natasha, stop." A hand extends through the door, holding a Glock. Bang! I jolt awake. Seven bangs his fist against my door. He doesn't text normal, and he doesn't wake people up normal either.
"We're leaving in 10.
My heart beats against my chest like it's trying to get out. "You're fine," I remind myself. "It's 7, stupid, but..."
"Leaving for what?"
I ask him.
"Basketball at the park. It's the last Saturday of the month, right? Isn't this what we always do?"
"But the riots and stuff..."
"Like Pop said, that stuff happened on the East. We're good over here. Plus, the news said it's quiet this morning."
What if somebody knows I'm the witness? What if they know that it's my fault that cop hasn't been arrested? What if we come across some cops and they know who I am?
"It'll be all right," Seven says, like he read my mind. "I promise. Now get your lazy butt up so I can kill you on the court."
If it's possible to be a sweet asshole, that's Seven. I get out of bed and put on my basketball shorts, LeBron jersey, and my 13s, like Jordan wore before he left the Bulls. I comb my hair into a ponytail. Seven waits for me at the front door, spinning the basketball between his hands. I snatch it from him, like you know what to do with it.
"We'll see about that."
I holler to let Mama and Daddy know we'll be back later, and leave. At first, Garden Heights looks the same, but a couple of blocks away, at least 5 police cars speed by. Smoke lingers in the air, making everything look hazy. It stinks, too. We make it to Rose Park. Some king lords sit in a gray Escalade across the street, and a younger one's on the park merry-go-round. Long as we don't bother them, they won't bother us. Rose Park occupies a whole block, and a tall chain-link fence surrounds it. I'm not sure what it's protecting, the graffiti on the basketball court, the rusting playground equipment, the benches that way too many babies have been made on, or the liquor bottles, cigarette butts, and trash that litter the grass. We're right near the basketball courts, but the entrance to the park is on the other side of the block. I toss the ball to Seven and climb the fence. I used to jump down from the top, but one fall and a sprained ankle stopped me from doing that again. When I get over the fence, Seven tosses the ball to me and climbs. Khalil, Natasha, and I used to take a shortcut through the park after school. We'd run up the slides, spin on the merry-go-round till we were dizzy, and try to swing higher than one another. I try to forget all that as I check the ball to Seven. "First at 30?
40,
he says, knowing damn well he'll be lucky if he gets 20 points. He can't play ball just like Daddy can't play ball. As if to prove it, Seven dribbles using the palm of his hand. You're supposed to use your fingertips. Then this fool shoots for a 3. The ball bounces off the rim, of course. I grab it and look at him. "Weak! You knew that shit wasn't going in."
"Whatever. Play the damn game."
5 minutes in, I have 10 points to his 2, and I basically gave him those. I fake left, make a quick right in a smooth crossover, and go for the 3. That baby goes in nicely. This girl's got game. Seven makes a tee with his hands. He pants harder than I do, and I'm the one who used to have asthma.
"Time out. Water break."
I wipe my forehead with my arm. The sun glares on the court already. "How about we call it?"
"Hell no. I got some game in me. I gotta get my angles right."
"Angles? This is ball 7.
not selfies.
Hey, yo,
some boy calls. We turn around and my breath catches. Shit. There are two of them. They look 13, 14 years old and are wearing green Celtics jerseys. Garden disciples, no doubt. They cross the courts, coming straight for us. The tallest one steps to Seven.
Nigga, you kangin?
I can't even take this fool seriously. His voice squeaks.
Daddy says there's a trick to telling OGs from young G's, besides their age. OGs don't start stuff. They finish it. Young G's always start stuff.
Nah, I'm neutral,
Seven says.
And King your daddy?
The shorter one asks.
Hell no. He just messing with my mama.
It don't even matter.
The tall one flicks out a pocket knife.
Hand your shit over. Sneakers, phones, everything.
Rule of the garden. If it doesn't involve you, it doesn't have shit to do with you. Period. The King Lords in the Escalade see everything going down. Since we don't claim their set, we don't exist. But the boy on the merry-go-round runs over and pushes the GDs back. He lifts up his shirt, flashing his piece.
We got a problem?
They back up.
Yeah, we got a problem, the shorter one says. You sure? Last time I checked, Rose Park was King territory.
He looks toward the Escalade. The King Lords inside nod at us, a simple way of asking if things are cool. We nod back.
Aight, the tall GD says. We got you.
The GDs leave the same way they came. The younger King Lord slaps palms with Seven.
You straight, bruh?
He asks.
Yeah. Good looking out, Vontae.
I can't lie. He's kind of cute. Hey, just because I have a boyfriend doesn't mean I can't look. And as much as Chris drools over Nicki Minaj, Beyonce, and Amber Rose, I dare him to get mad at me for looking. On a side note, my boyfriend clearly has a type. This Vontae guy's around my age, a little taller, with a big afro puff and the faint signs of a mustache. He has some nice lips, too. Real plump and soft. I've looked at them too long. He licks them and smiles.
I had to make sure you and little mama were okay.
And that ruins it. Don't call me by a nickname if you don't know me.
Yeah, we're fine, I say.
Them GDs helped you out anyway, he tells Seven. She was killing you out here. Man, shut up, Seven says. This is my sister, Star.
Oh, yeah, the guy says. You the one who work up in Big Mav's store, ain't you? Like I said, I get that all the time. Yep, that's me.
Star, this is Devontae,
Seven says.
He's one of King's boys.
Devontae? So this is the dude Kenya fought over.
Yeah, that's me.
He looks at me from head to toe and licks his lips again. You heard about me or something?
All that lip licking. Not cute. Yeah, I've heard about you.
And you may want to get some chapstick if your lips that dry, since you're licking them so much.
Damn, it's like that?
What she means is thanks for helping us out,
Seven says, even though that's not what I meant.
We appreciate it.
It's all good. Them fools running around here because the riot's happening on their side. It's too hot for them over there.
What you doing in the park this early anyway?
Seven asks. He shoves his hands in his pockets and shrugs.
Post it up. You know how it go.
He's a D-boy. Damn. Kenya really knows how to pick them.
Anytime drug-dealing gangbangers are your type, you've got some serious issues.
Well, King is her daddy.
I heard about your brother,
Seven says.
I'm sorry, man. Dalvin was a cool dude.
Devontae kicks at a pebble on the court.
Thanks. Mom's taking it real hard. That's why I'm here. Had to get out the house.
Dalvin? Devante? I tilt my head. Your mama named y'all after them dudes from that old group Jodeci?
I only know because my parents loved them some Jodeci.
Yeah, so?
It was just a question. You don't have to have an attitude.
A white Tahoe screeches to a stop on the other side of the fence. Daddy's Tahoe. His window rolls down. He's in a wife beater and pillow marks zigzag across his face. I pray he doesn't get out, because knowing Daddy, his legs are ashy and he's wearing Nike flip-flops with socks.
What the hell y'all thinking, leaving the house without telling nobody?
He yells. The King Lords across the street bust out laughing. Devante coughs into his fist like he wants to laugh too. Seven and I look at everything but Daddy.
Oh, y'all want to act like y'all don't hear me? Answer me when I'm talking to you.
The King Lords howl with laughter.
Pops, we just came to play ball,
Seven says.
I don't care. All this shit going on and y'all leave? Get in this truck.
God damn, I say under my breath. Always gotta act a fool.
What you say?
He barks. The King Lords howl louder. I want to disappear.
Nothing, I say.
Nah, it was something. Tell you what, don't climb the fence. Go round to the entrance, and I bet not beat y'all there.
He drives off.
Shit.
I grab my ball, and Seven and I haul ass across the park. The last time I ran this fast, Coach was making us do suicides. We get to the entrance as Daddy pulls up. I climb in the back of the truck, and Seven's dumb butt gets in the passenger seat. Daddy drives off.
Done lost your minds, he says. People rioting, damn near calling the National Guard around here, and y'all want to play ball.
Why you have to embarrass us like that? Seven snaps.
I'm so glad I'm in the back seat. Daddy turns toward Seven, not even looking at the road, and growls,
You ain't too old.
Seven stares ahead. Steam is just about coming off him. Daddy looks at the road again.
Got some goddamn nerve talking to me like that because some King Lords were laughing at you? What, you kinging now?
Seven doesn't respond.
I'm talking to you, boy.
No, sir,
he bites out.
So why you care what they think? You want to be a man so damn bad, but men don't care what nobody thinks.
He pulls into our driveway. Not even halfway up the walkway, I see Mama through the screen on the door, in her nightgown, her arms folded and her bare foot tapping.
Get in this house,
she shouts. She paces the living room as we come in. The question isn't if she'll explode, but when. Seven and I sink onto her good sofa.
Where were y'all?
She asks.
And you better not lie.
The basketball court, I mumble, staring at my J's.
Mama leans down close to me and puts her hand to her ear.
What was that? I didn't hear you good. Speak up, girl,
Daddy says. The basketball court, I repeat louder.
The basketball court.
Mama straightens up and laughs.
She said the basketball court.
Her laughter stops, and her voice gets louder with each word.
I'm walking around here worried out my mind, and y'all at the damn basketball court?
Somebody giggles in the hallway.
Sekani, go to your room,
Mama says without looking that way. His feet thump hurriedly down the hall.
I hollered and told y'all we were leaving. I say.
Oh, she hollered, Daddy mocks. Did you hear anybody holler, baby? 'Cause I didn't.
Mama sucks her teeth.
Neither did I. She can wake us up to ask for some money, but she can't wake us up to tell us she's going in a war zone.
It's my fault, Seven says. I wanted to get her out the house and do something normal.
Baby, there's no such thing as normal right now, says Mama. You see what's been happening, and y'all were crazy enough to go out there like that?
Dumb enough is more like it,
Daddy adds. I keep my eyes on my shoes.
Hand over your phones, Mama says.
What?
I shriek.
That's not fair. I hollered and told y'all.
Star Amara? She says through her teeth. Since my first name is only one syllable, she has to throw my middle name in there to break it down.
If you don't hand me that phone, I swear to God.
I open my mouth, but she goes, say something else.
I dare you, say something else. I'll take all them Jordans, too.
This is some bullshit, for real. Daddy watches us, her attack dog, waiting for us to make a wrong move. That's how they work. Mama does the first round, and if it's not successful, Daddy goes for the KO, and you never want Daddy to go for the KO. Seven and I hand her our phones. I thought so, she says, and passes them to Daddy. Since y'all want normal so much, go get your stuff. We're going to Carlos's for the day.
Nah, not him. Daddy motions Seven to get up. He going to the store with me.
Mama looks at me and jerks her head toward the hall.
Go. I ought to make you take a shower, smelling like outside.
As I'm leaving, she hollers,
and don't get any skimpy stuff to wear to Carlos's either. Ooh, she gets on my nerves.
See, Chris lives down the street from Uncle Carlos. I am glad she didn't say any more in front of Daddy, though. Brix meets me at my bedroom door. He jumps up my legs and tries to lick my face. I had about 40 shoeboxes stacked in a corner, and he knocked all of them over. I scratch behind his ears. Clumsy dog. I would take him with us, but they don't allow pits in Uncle Carlos's neighborhood. He settles on my bed and watches me pack. I only really need my swimsuit and some sandals, but Mama could decide to stay out there the whole weekend because of the riots. I pack a couple of outfits and get my school backpack. I throw each backpack over a shoulder. Come on, Brix. He follows me to his spot in the backyard, and I hook him up to his chain. While I refill Brix's food and water bowls, Daddy crouches beside his roses and examines the petals. He waters them like he's supposed to, but for some reason they're dry looking.
Come on now. He tells them, y'all gotta do better than this.
Mama and Sakani wait for me in her Camry. I end up in the passenger seat. It's childish, but I don't want to sit this close to her right now. Unfortunately, it's either sit next to her or sit next to Sir Farts-a-Lot Sakani. I'm staring straight ahead, and out the corner of my eye, I see her looking at me. She makes this sound like she's about to speak, but her words decide to come out as a sigh. Good. I don't want to talk to her either. I'm being petty as hell and don't even care. We head for the freeway, passing the Cedar Grove Projects where we used to live. We get to Magnolia Avenue, the busiest street in Garden Heights, where most of the businesses are located. Usually on Saturday mornings, guys around the neighborhood have their cars on display, cruising up and down the street and racing each other. Today the street's blocked off. A crowd marches down the middle of it. They're holding signs and posters of Khalil's face and are chanting, "Justice for Khalil!" I should be out there with them. But I can't join that march, knowing I'm one of the reasons they're protesting. You know none of this is your fault, right? Mama asks. How in the world did she do that? I know. I mean it, baby. It's not. You did everything right. But sometimes right's not good enough, huh? She takes my hand, and despite my annoyance, I let her. It's the closest thing I get to an answer for a while. Saturday morning traffic on the freeway moves smoothly compared to weekday traffic. Sakani puts his headphones on and plays with his tablet. Some 90s R&B songs play on the radio, and Mama sings along under her breath. When she really gets into it, she attempts all kinds of runs and goes, "Yes, girl, yes!" Out of nowhere, she says, "You weren't breathing when you were born." My first time hearing that. For real? Uh-huh.
I was 18 when I had you. Still a baby myself, but I thought I was grown. Wouldn't admit to anybody that I was scared to death. Your Nana thought there was no way in hell I could be a good parent. Not wild Lisa. I was determined to prove her wrong. I stopped drinking and smoking, went to all of my appointments, ate right, took my vitamins, the whole nine. Shoot, I even played Mozart on some headphones and put them on my belly. We see what good that was. You didn't finish a month of piano lessons. I laugh. Sorry. It's okay. Like I was saying, I did everything right. I remember being in that delivery room, and when they pulled you out, I waited for you to cry. But you didn't. Everybody ran around, and your father and I kept asking what was wrong. Finally, the nurse said you weren't breathing. I freaked out. Your daddy couldn't calm me down. He was barely calm himself. After the longest minute of my life, you cried. I think I cried harder than you, though. I knew I did something wrong. But one of the nurses took my hand. Mama grabs my hand again, looked me in the eye, and said, "Sometimes you can do everything right, and things will still go wrong. The key is to never stop doing right." She holds my hand for the rest of the drive. I used to think the sun shone brighter out here in Uncle Carlos's neighborhood, but today it really does. There's no smoke lingering, and the air is fresher. All the houses have two stories. Kids play on the sidewalks and in the big yards. There are lemonade stands, garage sales, and lots of joggers. Even with all that going on, it's real quiet. We pass Maya's house a few streets over from Uncle Carlos's. I would text her and see if I could come over, but, you know, I don't have my phone. "You can't visit your little friend today," Mama says, reading my mind once a freaking again. "You're grounded." My mouth flies wide open. "But she can come over to Carlos's and see you." She glances at me out the corner of her eye with a half smile. This is supposed to be the moment I hug her and thank her and tell her she's the best. Not happening. I say, "Cool, whatever," and sit back. She busts out laughing. "You are so stubborn." "No, I'm not." "Yes, you are," she says, "just like your father." Soon as we pull into Uncle Carlos's driveway, Sakani jumps out. Our cousin Daniel waves at him from down the sidewalk with some other boys, and they're all on their bikes. "Later, Mama," Sakani says. He runs past Uncle Carlos, who's coming out the garage, and grabs his bike. Sakani got it for Christmas, but he keeps it at Uncle Carlos's house because Mama's not about to let him ride around Garden Heights. He pedals down the driveway. Mama hops out and calls after him, "Don't go too far!" I get out, and Uncle Carlos meets me with a perfect Uncle Carlos hug. Not too tight, but so firm that it tells me how much he loves me in a few seconds. He kisses the top of my head twice and asks,
"How are you doing, baby girl?"
"Okay," I sniff. Smoke's in the air. The good kind, though. "You barbecuing?"
"Just heated the grill up. Gonna throw some burgers and chicken on for lunch."
"I hope we don't end up with food poisoning," Mama teases.
"Ah, look who's trying to be a comedian," he says. "You'll be eating your words and everything I cook, baby sis, because I'm about to throw down. Food Network doesn't have anything on me."
And he pops his collar. Lord, he's so corny sometimes. Aunt Pam tends to the grill on the patio. My little cousin Ava sucks her thumb and hugs Aunt Pam's leg. The second she sees me, she comes running. "Star, Star!" Her ponytails fly as she runs, and she launches herself into my arms. I swing her around. getting a whole lot of giggles out of her. How's my favorite 3-year-old in the whole wide world doing? Good. She sticks her wrinkly wet thumb back in her mouth. Hey, Auntie Lily.
Hey, baby. You been good?
Ava nods too much. No way she's been that good. Aunt Pam lets Uncle Carlos handle the grill and greets Mama with a hug. She has dark brown skin and big curly hair. Nana likes her because she comes from a good family. Her mom is an attorney, and her dad is the first black chief of surgery at the same hospital where Aunt Pam works as a surgeon. Real-life Huxtables, I swear. I put Ava down, and Aunt Pam hugs me extra tight. How are you doing, sweetie?
Okay.
She says she understands, but nobody really does. Nana comes busting out the back door with her arms outstretched. My girls! That's the first sign something's up. She hugs me and Mama and kisses our cheeks. Nana never kisses us, and she never lets us kiss her. She says she doesn't know where our mouths have been. She frames my face with her hands, talking about, thank the Lord he spared your life. Hallelujah! So many alarms go off in my head. Not that she wouldn't be happy that the Lord spared my life, but this isn't Nana at all. She takes me and Mama by our wrists and pulls us toward the poolside loungers. Y'all come over here and talk to me. But I was going to talk to Pam. Nana looks at Mama and hisses through gritted teeth, shut the hell up, sit down, and talk to me, goddammit. Now that's Nana. She sits back in a lounger and fans herself all dramatically. She's a retired theater teacher, so she does everything dramatically. Mama and I share a lounger and sit on the side of it. What's wrong? Mama asks.
When?
She begins, but plasters on a fake smile when Ava waddles over with her baby doll and a comb. Ava hands both to me and goes to play with some of her other toys. I comb the doll's hair. That girl has me trained. Doesn't have to say anything, and I do it. Once Ava's out of earshot, Nana says,
when y'all taking me back to my house?
What happened? Mama asks.
Keep your damn voice down.
Ironically, she's not keeping hers down.
Yesterday morning, I took some catfish out for dinner. Was going to fry it up with some hush puppies, fries, the whole nine. I left to run some errands.
What kind of errands? I asked, for the hell of it. Nana cuts me the look, and it's like seeing Mama in 30 years with a few wrinkles and gray hair she missed when coloring her hair. She'd whip my behind for saying that.
I'm grown, little girl. She says, don't ask me what I do. Anyway, I come home, and that heifer done covered my catfish in some damn cornflakes and baked it.
Cornflakes, I say, parting the doll's hair.
Yes, talking about it's healthier that way. If I want healthy, I eat a salad.
Mama covers her mouth, and the edges of her lips are turned up.
I thought you and Pam got along.
We did, until she messed with my food. Now, I've dealt with a lot of things since I've been here, but that, she holds up a finger, is taking it too damn far. I'd rather live with you and that ex-con than deal with this.
Mama stands and kisses Nana's forehead. You'll be all right. Nana waves her off. When Mama leaves, she looks at me.
You okay, little girl? Carlos told me you were in the car with that boy when he was killed.
Yes, ma'am. I'm okay.
Good. And if you're not, you will be. We're strong like that.
I nod. But I don't believe it. At least, not about myself. The doorbell rings up front. I say, I'll get it. Put Ava's doll down and go inside.
Crap.
Chris is on the other side of the door. I want to apologize to him, but damn it. I need time to prepare.
Weird, though. He's pacing. The same way he does when we study for tests or before a big game.
He's afraid to talk to me.
I open the door and lean against the frame.
Hey.
Hey.
He smiles. And despite everything, I smile too.
I was washing one of my dad's cars and saw you guys pull up, he says.
That explains his tank top, flip-flops, and shorts.
Are you okay? I know you said you were in your text, but I wanted to be sure.
I'm okay, I say.
Your dad's store didn't get hit, did it?
He asks. Nope.
Good.
Staring in silence. He sighs.
Look, if this is about the condom stuff, I'll never buy one again.
Never?
Well, only when you want me to. He quickly adds, which doesn't have to be anytime soon. Matter of fact, you don't have to ever sleep with me. Or kiss me. Hell, if you don't want me to touch you, I...
Chris. Chris, I say, my hands up to get him to slow down, and I'm fighting a laugh. It's okay. I know what you mean.
Okay.
Okay. Another round of staring and silence. I'm sorry, actually, I tell him, shifting my weight from foot to foot, for giving you the silent treatment. It wasn't about the condom.
Oh,
his eyebrows meet.
Then what was it about?
I sigh. I don't feel like talking about it.
So you can be mad at me, but you can't even tell me why?
It has nothing to do with you.
Yeah, it does, if you're giving me the silent treatment, he says.
You wouldn't understand.
Maybe you should let me determine that myself, he says. Here I am calling you, texting you everything, and you can't tell me why you're ignoring me? That's kind of shitty, Star.
I give him this look, and I have a strong feeling I look like Mama and Nana right now with their "I know you didn't just say that" glare. I told you, you wouldn't understand, so drop it.
No.
He folds his arms.
I came all the way down here.
All the way? Bruh, all what way? Down the street? Garden Heights Star is all up in my voice right now.
Yeah, down the street, he says. And guess what? I didn't have to do that, but I did. And you can't even tell me what's going on.
You're white, okay? I yell. You're white! Silence.
I'm white?
He says, like he's just hearing that for the first time.
What the fuck's that got to do with anything?
Everything! You're white! I'm black! You're rich! I'm not!
That doesn't matter, he says. I don't care about that kind of stuff, Star. I care about you.
That kind of stuff is part of me.
Okay, and it's no big deal. God, seriously, this is what you're pissed about? This is why you're giving me the silent treatment?
I stare at him, and I know, I'm straight up looking like Lisa Janae Carter. My mouth is slightly open like hers when I or my brothers get smart, as she calls it. I've pulled my chin back a little, and my eyebrows are raised. Shit, my hand's even on my hip. Chris takes a small step back, just like my brothers and I do.
It doesn't make sense to me, okay? That's all.
So like I said, you don't understand, do you?
Bam.
If I'm acting like my mom, this is one of her, see, I told you, moments.
No, I guess I don't,
he says. Another round of silence. Chris puts his hands in his pockets.
Maybe you can help me understand? I don't know. But I do know that not having you in my life is worse than not making beats or playing basketball. And you know how much I love making beats and playing basketball, Star.
I smirk. You call that a line?
He bites his bottom lip and shrugs. I laugh. He does too.
Bad line, huh? He asks.
Awful. We go silent again, but it's the type of silence I don't mind. He puts his hand out for mine. I still don't know if I'm betraying who I am by dating Chris, but I've missed him so much it hurts. Mama thinks coming to Uncle Carlos's house is normal, but Chris is the kind of normal I really want. The normal where I don't have to choose which star to be. The normal where nobody tells you how sorry they are or talks about Khalil the drug dealer. Just normal. That's why I can't tell Chris I'm the witness. I take his hand, and everything suddenly feels right. No flinching and no flashbacks. Come on, I say. Uncle Carlos should have the burgers ready. We go into the backyard, hand in hand. He's smiling, and surprisingly, I am too.